Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 6 of The Dive. We've got a very special episode today. We're being joined by none other than Team Liquid's AD Carry, TSM's former AD Carry, COG's former AD Carry, Curse's former AD Carry, Epic Gamer's former AD Carry, Doublelift. Welcome.
Glad to be here. Also, AD Carry didn't exist when I was on Epic Gamer, but okay.
I just remember you playing a lot of Poppy and Blitzcrank way back in the day. Yeah. Face checking with Lee Sin. Some good old memories. But we also need to note that this is being recorded on Monday. Usually we do them on Wednesday, but you've got to do Mondays for the scrim schedule here for Mr. Doublelift.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to get pro player guests on this show because we normally film Wednesday morning and you guys are always scrimming. So making a special exception for our favorite friend.
Am I the first pro?
You are the first pro. We had Parth last year. And then when we're doing international events, we get a bunch of the international casters. So we've had like Vettius and Frostcurrent and Deficio and Papa Smithy and stuff. But yeah.
He knew that, by the way, because he watches
every week. Yeah, he watches every week.
He's a big fan.
You're among an elite group.
Of yourself.
Yeah. One thing we were talking about last week that I kind of want to get your opinion on right off the bat is I felt like after 4 weeks of the LCS, there were a lot of teams that hadn't really figured out how to play. And one of my theories on that was we had 41 new starters essentially on teams with all the mobility, but most of them were veterans. We only had 3 rookies. So we had all these players that have played for like 3 or 4 years, have a distinct play style, and then they switch teams, and there's all these different like mindsets of how you should play the game. This guy's a late game player, this guy's an early game player. Do you read into that at all, or do you think like the level plays for a different reason?
I don't really categorize players as like a certain type of player that much. There's like some exceptions, like my former teammates, I know a lot more about them than like other players. So I know like Dennis or like Svenskeren plays a certain type of way, and like he's probably, even though like on C9 they want him to like switch it up, he probably will still default to like the stuff that he's been doing for the last 2 years. But yeah, I think it's just whenever you're on a new team, like you said, the different habits that people have, you just need time to like get over it and like figure it out.
How much do you think is like, you know, not just classifying a player as like, oh, you know, oh, he's only good at early game, but more, you know, where you place the importance of how you should play the game, or you know, your role within a team, right? Like if you're the shot caller on TSM and you move to TL and now you're not, or if you think that you should always be playing late game styles and kind of slow paced on TSM and now you're not, or whatever, vice versa. Like how much does that actually affect how the teammates are working together, like when you are swapping teams, you know, when people have different priorities and they're used to being leaders and maybe aren't leaders now, that sort of thing?
Well, it's definitely easier to transition from like being a leader to not, I think, because like on TSM, it was like very stringent with like the responsibilities everyone had. And like I knew my responsibilities, like where I was supposed to step up. And then I joined Team Liquid and I was like, I don't really want to do that anymore because it doesn't really work. Like I feel like when I go to Worlds, AD Carry is, it's just too hard to do it from this position. Like that's how I've felt for the last couple of years. And so coming in, like it was actually so easy. Like I felt such a burden off my shoulders when I started playing. And then we had like a great start. And then now, we went 0-2. So I'm starting to think, you know, maybe like changing things up is probably better.
There was something right after the games from your 0-2. You tweeted out you didn't want to let Impact down again. I kind of want to just prod you a little bit more on that. Like, in what way exactly did you let him down? What's going to change? That type of thing.
Dude, it's so sad. He was like crying after the game, and he really wanted to win. And like, we won against TSM, and that felt really good for me. And then we're up against C9, and now, you know, it's a game he really wants to win. And I felt so bad for him that basically Smoothie screwed over his early game, like roaming top, and like we didn't have a support Mia call at that time, so it was just like, oh, Alistar's top and I'm dead. And then he, you know, he got solo killed, which is like, how much of that is an extension of like the mistake where we didn't call Mia? And like the matchup and everything, like that happens. Like I don't think you should like lose the game off of one solo kill, but he felt really bad and he was like apologizing in the game, like I'm sorry, oh my god, I'm so bad. It's like that felt really bad in the game where it's like, it's okay, like don't tell, we can still win. And then, you know, it's like kind of our time to step up, like me, Ole, Pobelter, and Smithy. And like, we're supposed to be better than that, like be able to like provide more like positive than a solo kill provides a negative. And we basically just like rolled over and died. And that just felt like just exactly the opposite of how we are supposed to play, like how we've been playing in scrims and how we want to play.
So how do you kind of control comms in a game like that then when it is starting to feel negative or defeatist or whatever, you know, if Impact is feeling like, you know, is apologizing constantly and you guys are supposed to be bringing it up, like, is there any point where you're like, nope, let's focus on the game, like, don't worry about it, you know, this sort of thing? Because obviously that can have kind of a mental weight on players. Like, even if you're playing solo queue and people are trying to FF the whole game, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like not the exact same, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think we're all veterans, so, like, we can just address and move on, you know, like, it's okay, we can still win, like, this is our plan for how we're gonna win the game. And like, maybe our plan was too broad, it was too general, like, oh, we're like way outscaling or whatever our plan was, it was not specific enough, and like, we couldn't execute on like small things. And C9 obviously has their game plan, which is, we're ahead, let's keep snowballing.
Did you see Jensen's interview?
I saw the headline of his interview. He's like, yeah, he thought we played, and I agree with him, like, we played really, really bad. Yeah. And it sucks when we play really bad in a game that has, like, more of a personal kind of, like, vendetta with Impact.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he wants to speed his replacement, basically. Yeah.
So in the interview with Jensen, I read the headline, but I also watched the interview, so I got, like, more context than most people who read the headlines. He said that going into the game, they thought you guys would put a lot of pressure out early because you had Taliyah in mid lane. And that you didn't. And that's essentially why he said you guys, like, played bad, because they just got to scale up. Like, do you agree with that? Or, like, why did it happen, basically?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we really screwed up on was, like, we had Taliyah and Gangplank, two globals, and we had a pretty even matchup bottom. Like, I missed some CS, and so I was, like, behind in CS to Ezreal. But I think, like, with double globals, you can always make the play.
Mm-hmm.
But Ole was really uncomfortable in the support matchup. And he basically just, like, didn't want to do anything with Braum against Alistar. And I think that was, like, just kind of, it made it so hard to plan, because we have these double global lanes that you can't make play on Taliyah lane. And it's kind of hard to make a play on GP lane because he got counterpicked. So we have to make the play on bottom, but it just, I guess our communication just kind of, like, broke down. We didn't have a play to make in our minds. So we're just like, okay, we'll just stall the game out. Which sucks. It's so bad.
So in a situation like that, you know, you talked about how moving this team, it felt like a weight off your shoulders to not have to be the leader. But when things start to go bad, does that not then feel like, you know, you want to have more impact? Because obviously, like, when you are a leader of a team, when you are a shot caller on a team, yes, there's more responsibility, there's more pressure, but there's also more ability to impact the game and change things that you feel are going wrong, right? And if you feel, okay, like, well, we're not doing this, we're not doing that, we should be making plays bot. If you're not the shot caller, you don't always get to choose, right? Like,
yeah.
Do you kind of regret that then, or want to change roles a little bit and take more responsibility?
Yeah, that's the big problem, I think, that was eliminated this week. It was just, we don't have a main shot caller, and if somebody wants on the team to do it, then I think I'm, like, probably the first in line to be the main shot caller. And yeah, if that's what we need, then I'm definitely willing to do it. I was like really hesitant to like step in and be like, guys, we should just listen to me because blah, 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 blah. Because I don't want to, I also don't want to be the, like, guy who comes in as, like, the bully, is like, demands all the resources, like, always listen to my play. You know, it kind of, like, feeds into the stereotypes that people have about me.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to be a team player when I joined the team.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't work and, like, I need to, like, start giving the team more direction and stuff, then definitely we'll do that.
If that doesn't work at Worlds, though, is that a concern?
Yeah, that's
and
always the concern.
Straight to it.
Well, I don't know. I think that's really interesting because in the few listen-ins that I've had in, you know, with teams and their communication, this split, as well as even the casters, we've been doing our flex queue.
Flex queue.
And trying to, like, do, you know, organize, you know, semi-competitive.
5 years ago, we were competitive players,
yeah.
So it's a little bit different now.
But one of the biggest things that has stood out to me, also with the pro teams, has been the elimination of some communication. Because lots of people are just saying so much extraneous information sometimes that there is no decisiveness. And the decisiveness is definitely a huge factor when watching the games. And I'm like, oh, you know, that team, it's obvious they don't have very good communication because, you know, they have obviously a couple of ideas that someone posed and then they're like debating whether that's the good idea while the other guy's already moving into position for something.
Meanwhile, you're like getting ganked or you need to pay attention to the ward or set up the next play. Like,
so like, that's why some of the questions around, oh, if you have a lot of players that have played for a long time and like have a strong opinion of how the game is supposed to be played, how do you go about like you're saying, stepping forward as I'm going to be the one who makes the final call if we have to make like a 2 second, you know, choice here. And how do you like eliminate some of the extraneous stuff that's going through the communications? I feel like that's the biggest struggle for a lot of the competitive teams right now.
Yeah, but you'd be surprised how flexible a lot of players are. Like, people thought that I was like this resource hog and that like we always need to play to my lane or else I'm just going to be like a liability or something. But like if you play long enough, then you can just kind of go with the flow. So I don't think anyone on my team is the kind of player who's like, well, if I'm not the one who came up with this idea, then I don't know how to execute on it. It's like, well, if you have a good idea, then I think like just especially my team, everyone is on board and like able to execute on something if it's good.
Do you think that's, you know, it's so much easier to say that, though, like, if you're winning, right? Like, because when I've played with teams in the past and things, it always feels like, oh, that's a great idea, you know, because it worked, right? Mm-hmm. Like, but, you know, I feel like it can be much harder to be flexible and to, you know, keep trying other people's ideas or this or that. If you're like, okay, well, we lost 4 times in a row with this, like,
yeah,
you know, like, that sucks, you were wrong, right? You know, I think that's where it sometimes feels like it gets a lot harder.
Yeah, I think that just comes down to does your team have a good roster or not? Like, yeah. can you win off like individual plays alone? And like, if you have a terrible roster, like the only way you can overcome that basically is just by somehow outsmarting them and having like some discipline with like how you listen to calls.
When you're talking about player flexibility, one thing that it's a point we've kind of made on the analyst desk a few times this year about Team Liquid, just looking at the players on the roster. Impact, super solid top laner when he's like left alone, right? You'd leave him on the island. That's when the top diamond came out in 2015. And Pobelter also, like, his reputation is, oh yeah, that's a solid mid laner who like can do whatever. And then you now have 2 solo laners that don't necessarily have the reputation of the whole team playing around them and being the carry. So the logical choice is that Team Liquid would then play around the bottom lane. Like, that's kind of the tricky question I wonder about when you're constructing this team, because to me, you guys have won the games when you smash bottom lane and everyone ganks bot, and you've lost all the games where that hasn't happened. So, like, as flexible as the players go, how do you kind of bridge that gap or actually play the different styles when the players' reputations and I feel like their skill sets kind of warrant 2 normal solo laners and then a carry bot lane?
I think that's just, like, what the team's goal is then, because in the regular season, sometimes you want to shore up those weaknesses so when you come playoffs, you didn't win the regular split doing one style and then, you know, like, lose the series. So, like, what our goal is ultimately is to be, like, a world-class team, to be the best team by playoffs. And if that means, like, losing regular season games by playing the top and mid, then I think that's just, like, a means to an end. So, if we just gank bottom, like, literally every single game, and I was kind of, like, the person who's talking the most, I don't feel like we would improve very much.
Right.
And also, to be fair, I mean, there's been more and more talk, I think, about how good Pobelter has been, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Fevin and PoE both pointed to him as who they thought was the best mid laner in the league. And, like, you know, so it's obviously a very talented mid laner. And Impact, yep, to your point, has been good on carry. So there definitely is flexibility there. But obviously, play style, you know, and sometimes it's like correlation and causation, right? Like, just because something didn't work one game doesn't mean that you can't do it or doesn't mean you fucked up. And, like, mm-hmm, league's so complicated that I think it can be like conflated issues sometimes.
Yeah.
I've been thinking a lot recently also about what coaches actually do and how it's different, you know, from team to team, and depending on what the players need and how much that has changed since when we started. Because when we first started, right, it was
no
like it was a ridiculous concept. You know, Chaucer was on our team and Chaucer would just tell us things, and we'd be like, that's really smart. And we trust Chaucer because he is one of the best players. You know, at the time, we were like, GG says something. We're like, yep, that's probably right because he's number one. You know, and Chaucer would have these ideas about how to play the game, and Hotshot would come up with like, oh, I'm going to play Cho'Gath bottom and with teleport and try to like soak a duo lane. Yeah, exactly. These sorts of things are how a lot of the innovations came about way back in the day. And Peter has played League of Legends since the very beginning. Yep. So you've gone through all the different stages. I am super curious what has been not only the person, but the kind of the style of any support staff, whether it's an analyst or coach or whatever. What do you think has been actually beneficial to you? Or has it just literally been they're all useless? Only the smart pro players have given me
the smile. Well, I definitely can't say they're all useless.
contractually obligated to not say that.
No. But like really, the coaches sometimes they bring that like that sixth opinion, I guess, but that sixth opinion can be formed in a lot of different ways. Like they can be really opinionated by themselves. They can have like a pro background. Like Koma was formerly a professional jungler. Kane was like one of the greatest like Korean supports, and Song was on that team as a mid laner. Like sometimes they have great backgrounds in that, or sometimes they have great backgrounds in like taking information in and making a system out of it, like Parth, mm-hmm. where, you know, he's might be like not a good player, but he's really good at taking what people tell him and like using that to make a system where he can find out like what the best way to coach is, or like the best team's goal should be. So I think overall, though, most teams really overvalue a coach. I think even in the community, they're like, they think, mm-hmm. what a bad draft. You know, the coach was the problem. Like, what a terrible, like, team style. What is the coach doing? But really, like, if your players are dumb, if your players are bad, no draft looks good. And no, like, sometimes their champion pool, they give bad information to the coach. They say, mm-hmm. this matchup is unplayable. But sometimes it's not an unplayable matchup. It's just a bad matchup, and you have to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And, like, your win condition isn't through that lane. Sometimes you have like lane only players who would like never want to take a losing matchup for the good of the team. Sometimes you have the ones who the opposite. They only want the winning matchup, but your
KDA players.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, wow, like cool. You got 10
All
CS ahead.
Jaces.
Yeah, exactly. Then you get the Jace Ryze comps. No, like actually though, in the end, the coaches are so. They're just a product of the environment, and you they have their own like flavor for the team. But I would say in the end, the players are the ones who make most of the things happen.
You didn't answer my question.
How did the coaches evolve?
Which was the most influential for you?
Most influential? Oh man!
Over the years,
I've been with Kane for like a few months, so I would say the most influential is still Parth.
It's interesting, right, with the different coaches having different systems and you saying that the coaches are kind of the product of the systems, because I think for the most part that's true now. Like a lot of the coaches, aside from some of the Korean coaches who are former players, are just the people that are good facilitators, they have good critical thinking skills, and they take in information. Whereas when you think about pro sports, and we've kind of had this conversation before, most of them had 10-year playing careers, 5 to 10-year coaching careers, and have really clear decisions of the way they want to play the game. Do you think we will ever get to a point where there is a coach that you would actually have confidence in, like just being the grand plan dude?
Me. I'm the only person that I would ever trust to do that.
So you don't actually think that there will be a coach during your playing career that you like respect enough that he's going to be like, yo, Doublelift, you need to play Varus in this game because it's best. And you just have to like follow him and you would have confidence doing that.
Well,
it's kind of a strange.
It depends.
Question,
no, right? Like actually, I think Kane and Parth could do that. They could tell me, like, even right now, Kane could just tell me, "Hey, I want you to play this, and I think that's the best for the team," and I would do it. And then we could like discuss maybe after why it was good or bad. Mm-hmm. And it depends on how strong your opinion is, because if you respect someone as your coach and they have a strong opinion, but you have like maybe a weak opinion or just kind of neutral, then you're gonna let them take over when they're so sure of something.
So what's your opinion on how important it actually is to have been a good player? You know, you talk about like pro player background and this sort of things for coaching. But when you look at like, you know, Bill Belichick or something like that, it's not like he can throw a 60-yard pass, right? But yet he's obviously, you know.
Who
like,
is that?
He's the coach of the New England Patriots.
Okay, so he's
they like, lost the Super Bowl this year.
But he's been in but they've won how many like, Super Bowls? Like in.
Yeah, they've won 5 Super Bowls, and I think they've been in 8 or 9.
Yeah, over the last like, you know.
20 years.
Okay, right? Okay. So it's like considered one of the most like impressive coaches and dominant coaches in any professional sport, right? But it's like and it's true of a lot of coaches. It's not like they're necessarily were a pro player or were incredible, but they're a very good coach. And it's kind of comes from the philosophy of like there was this study by Google a while ago that was talking about managers, right? And in most companies, traditionally, like say you're an engineer, now you're the best engineer, so you become the manager of the engineers, right? But the skills that you use to become a good engineer do not necessarily make you a good manager. And I think the same could be kind of like looked at as far as like pro player to coach, right? You know, if Faker is the best player in the world and everyone accepts that, it doesn't necessarily mean he's the best coach. And then if that is true, like how necessary is it, right? Like are people, do you think teams are indexing too much on like pro experience or like video game experience and not enough on actual like coaching skill and like, you know, the ability to like organize teams and like find the best ways for them to improve and these sorts of things?
How do you tell who has those skills? How do you measure that? Yeah. You can measure someone's skill.
With coaching history, perhaps, right?
Yeah, but there's none of that. But they have playing history, and that's the thing that you can measure.
I think my answer to that would also be because of the way that League of Legends is played and how it's a decision-based game, right? Mm-hmm. It's not mostly mechanics. It's mostly the choices that you're making in this game. And it's so hard to trust someone's opinion who, like, if you're sitting at bronze or something, like, you don't even need good mechanics or anything. I just know that, like, your decision-making is not going to apply to pro games, right? So it's very hard to be like, oh, our coach is laying out this game plan, you know, but he either doesn't play that much or isn't able to utilize or show that he can understand the decisions that you're supposed to make. And there's so many of them that it really does have to be dynamic.
It's interesting, though, because, like, you know, you look at, like, Zix, and he's, what, like, gold or plat or something like that, and people consider him.
But he's also been diamond in the past.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know how high Parth has been, or I don't know the ranking of, like, all the different coaches, and that's, you know, but it's like, if someone can be a gold player and be a really good coach, like, can you not be, like, a silver player and be a really good coach? Can you not be a bronze player and be a really good coach?
Wondering where the cutoff is.
You know what I mean? Like,
you have to define, I think, what kind of coach you're looking for.
Yeah, of course, yeah. And I just, that's kind of the discussion is just as far as, like, are, like, do you think, like, long term? So I agree now, like, there's not a big base of coaches to take from, right? But, like, are people indexing for the wrong skills, right? Like, does it make more sense to have someone who is an incredible people manager, like, learn some of like the League of Legends type skills to then become a better coach in the future, right? Like, does it make more sense to have someone who has already skill in coaching, like a great football coach or whatever, right? Like, learn some of the other skills instead of trying to have someone who's a pro player their whole life and then immediately they're just the coach and now, like, have not built up any of the other skill set. You know, that's just all I'm kind of talking
about. Yeah. I mean, I think esports teams have tried a little bit of both. And, like, Double, if you've experienced almost both of them, right? You were on CLG when they brought in, I forget that guy's name, but he was the, like,
Monty?
Not Monty. Yeah, I cannot remember Monty's name. Yeah. No, shoot, he Blurred Limes or whatever.
Yeah, Coach Chris.
Yeah, Coach Chris.
Sorry, I was the one who said the blacklisted name, but
no,
it's
that's
not a blacklisted name.
I'm just kidding.
That's why it was funny, because it's not a blacklisted name. It's like,
sorry, he must not be named.
Clearly.
No, Blurred Limes. Yeah, no, Coach Chris was exactly what you were talking about. Like, he was probably, you know, a terrible player. I don't even know what ranking he was in. We didn't care. We brought him in for totally different skills than anything that had to do with the game. And because he was a great people person and he was great at making a team culture of people who, like, worked hard, respected each other and were friendly and, like, and had, like, brotherhood. And that was, like, exactly the opposite of what CLG had. We were all toxic. We hated each other.
Were you all toxic or was it just...
No. Like, the whole environment was toxic, okay. I promise. Yeah. And, like, you know, when we argued, we looked at our computer screens. We didn't even, like, make eye contact.
Is, like, the statute of limitations passed? You can tell us about the, like, what's an example of something that's, like, actually toxic? Because people meme about toxicity a lot. I know, like, EchoFox.
I just can't. I would get in so
that
much trouble.
Immediately.
Right. If I name names, then it's just...
Yeah, you're right. It's going to be, like,
it's
whole...
so bad. But, like, one day I'll make a memoir and you guys will just be, like, mind
blown.
It'll
be the Dunzo Manifesto.
Yes, it will sound like a cult. It will sound like I was a part of a cult, but... But
will you ever make that? Because I've thought that about WoW stuff, and I'm just like,
it's
I
too
look
long
back
at
and
this
I'm like,
point. Like, no one cares.
Yeah, exactly.
No,
it would just be so deep.
I will wait.
Yeah, I'll wait. I will
pre-order,
be interested.
Pre-order.
10 years.
Pre-order now.
I'll pre-order.
But did that style of coaching actually? Did you find it was effective? Do you think that more teams should have that?
It was so effective for our team, but maybe some teams they don't need that. Maybe, like, I don't know. I don't know what it's like to be on another team. Maybe Golden Guardians is a team with incredible, you know, they have great friendship. They treat each other as brothers and, like, comrades and stuff. But, like, in the game, they need more direction. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. Like, who knows? Because only the people on the team really know. And you don't even know how the team is going to play until, you know, weeks into LCS.
And stuff goes bad.
Yeah, and then it's like, well, we already have our coach.
Yeah, and that kind of brings me to something I've been curious about with all of the new franchises and everyone talking about creating the infrastructure and Team Liquid having, like, 7 coaches and then Golden Guardians hiring, like, 6 staff. Like, have you noticed a change? Like, are you experiencing differences? Like, what infrastructure do you feel like is actually been helpful? Because it's not just a coach that's making all the decisions. It's like Team Liquid's training facility and all the food that you get now. Do they give you free Chipotle or do you still have to buy yourself? Or do they make you new food? Like, what is it about infrastructure that you think actually leads to improvement. Like, is it the training facility? Is it, you know, better house? Like, what is this franchising infrastructure changing about the scene? Since you've been on so many teams and been in the scene for so long.
Training facility helps. It's not the biggest one. Oh, man. It's all these little things definitely add up. They're like, it's like the percentages, you know, like maybe 1 or 2% mm-hmm. each one. Having an amazing coach, having things taken care of you, amenities like food or like having an amazing house that you really enjoy being in. Like, I saw some house tours and they're just ridiculous.
The 100 Thieves house?
Yeah, yeah. Where they don't even have furniture.
Yeah, it's Rock and Mortgage.
classic gaming house with zero furniture, just a bed on the floor. But yeah, like all these things add up and then, but really what matters is your roster.
House.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's still the players.
It's right? always the roster. You can always just say, wow, if that team just had a better X player, if they just, no one on this team is good. So how are they expected to win? Even with amazing coaching and infrastructure and stuff. So it's so like meaningless in the end because the thing that matters most is always a good roster.
Yeah. And I think you want to mold the other stuff around that. Like we've been talking about coaches for mm-hmm. a long time, but coaches, such a general and ambiguous term. You know, in Korea, they've got like head coach and mm-hmm. dude is a very separate strategic coach and then analyst. And like, so you definitely want multiple people on the staff, right? Because you're going to need some sort of analyst or strategic coach, at least another opinion, like he's talking about, to like bring new ideas and or watch other regions and stuff. But then it's another issue as far as the structure.
I like the way that you put it as far as, you know, it's all like a couple of percentages, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think it matters, you know, if you're saying like, okay, you have the worst roster in the league versus the best roster in the league. And okay, well, one has a nicer house with a hot tub. Okay, you don't start winning.
They win now. They did it.
But I do think that stuff can matter when it's like, okay, these two teams are both really good, right? Like, you know, it's not going to take you from last to a championship, but maybe it takes you from second or third to a championship, right? And I think it gets tougher. And that's one of the things that's kind of interesting to me about the NLCS this year is there's a lot of teams that seem fairly competitive, right? Like between fourth and eighth, it's one win difference, right? And when it's that close, I do think that those percentages can mean a lot, right? Like if one or two wins can actually like get you from eighth to playoffs, then hey, that's pretty good for your brand. And, you know, if one or two wins, like, you know, might be the difference between some of the other teams. Like when you're looking at the top right now, you guys are sitting in third, you know, Echo Fox and C9 are in first. Like how big do you think the differences are there? Do you think that is something that can come down to like coaching staff facilities? Like, is it that minute or do you think it's something else?
It could come down to those things, but I've never once been like, man, our coach sucks and that's why we lost. Or I didn't like our training facility or anything. Like it's always, man, if we just didn't make that one mistake and maybe that's a snowball.
Shouldn't that be a coach? Like, couldn't the coach have preempted that theoretically? You know?
Yeah, you can always complain that you don't have the god coach. Maybe like Koma would have fixed that, but
yeah.
Who knows? I don't really like to blame that. It's always, of course.
Not about. I wasn't trying to get you to.
Oh yeah, yeah. No. I know. It's just I think some players' mentality might be that, you know, that those are the things that's like holding them back. But it's always just yourself.
I got one kind of theoretical question since you've played against them a little bit at Worlds. If we talk about Samsung, like when you say it is all about the players, and I actually like largely agree with that. The roster in League of Legends, the coach is not able to be in the game with them. They have to be able to make their own decisions in game, and like a coach can help with that, but ultimately it's the player. You look at Samsung, where they win the World Championship in 2014. Both Samsung White and Blue lose their entire roster. 10 players go to the LPL, and then 3 years later, they're in the world final. 4 years later, they win it again. Like, is there something there with Samsung where their organization is good at building players, or are they just really good at finding the right players to run their system, right? Because you got to credit the organization in that sense, right? Because they lost all their players, and 4 years later, they win the world championship again.
Huh.
It's a strange one, right? Because I don't know what Samsung does. What'd you say?
They got lucky. Damn, I don't like thinking about Samsung because if I didn't die to Victor, then we probably would have been in the finals.
Would have 2-0'd them.
Yeah, we would have 2-0'd them. And if we 2-0'd a team that was in the finals, I'm pretty sure we had a chance at the finals. That was a finals where it went to game 5, mm-hmm. and off of one mistake, Ruler got caught. They lost mm-hmm. a really close game against SKT. It's like, man, that could have been me making that mistake in the finals, you know? Yeah. Like
That hurts.
Sneaky trigger question you got there,
I didn't
Jack.
Actually mean to do that. I saw they triggered you in Biofrost on the alt stream when they were just like, that was like a roast double lift show. I thought you handled that well.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, people, I don't think that was like a 10% of what I get on a daily basis off like Twitter and Facebook. So
it's okay, buddy. Yeah.
I'm battle hardy. Y'all think you're great.
Oh, thank you.
I thought it was just a really fun stream.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, is anybody interested in the patch? Because I think we should move on to the meta. People have been discussing and complaining quite heavily, I think even more now than at times in the past, even though there's always a pretty big vocal push against big changes, the current meta. And the current meta, top laners were complaining a lot, then jungler...
Top laner was complaining a lot.
Well, no, all the top laners.
Okay, okay. A lot of them.
Oversimplified.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of the pro top laners are different, but it's a totally different game in pro solo queue.
But yeah, so what kind of how do you feel about, so 8.3, I'd say the most relevant nerf to you would be the Kog'Maw one, which for win rates, just for normal people in solo queue, took him from like
first to last.
So that's definitely a very big one, and that's going to affect your role directly. But how do you feel about kind of the overall state of the map? And this is, of course, from your point of view, professional AD carry player.
Professional. Well, yeah, I mean, Kog'Maw's nerf, if you think about it number-wise, like when you have Ginsu's, before it was doing an average of 10.5%, and now it's doing an average of 7.5%, which it's, like 30% nerf essentially on the W. That's huge, and that's why he went so far down. But then, it's so weird how much they nerfed him, and then how little they buffed Lucian, who was previously, and I think might still, no, he's the second lowest one right now at, 46 or something. And they just barely touched him. It's like they're so afraid of making Lucian viable again. It's like so weird that they nerfed Kog'Maw so much, but they didn't nerf Tristana, who is like next in line and also just takes like zero skill. You just like auto the front line.
He's my go-to AD carry.
Yeah, exactly. Like I'm sure anyone can play Tristana the same as me. It's not that hard. And
the exact same.
Exactly.
Pretty much. Like I think... I would just love to see more skillful AD carries in the meta.
Yeah, well, one thing about the Lucian buff, I also think when you mention, and this, I'm not responsible for this nerf, I haven't talked to them about it or anything, but I do think when Lucian is good, he's the only AD carry you pick, which I think isn't necessarily good for the meta because I don't necessarily know if the kit's in the right place where he has, that niche. Because his skill cap is so high, if he's viable in pro, every pro plays him and then it becomes really simple. And I think Tristan is actually kind of in a similar spot, so... I'm not sure what they're going to do with that one.
Is that true, though? Because last time Lucian was viable, it was as an AD carry. When he was viable as an AD carry, it was season 6, summer split, I think. And, well, that wasn't the very last time. But he...
Didn't you play Lucian, 18 times?
Yeah.
Like 20
I was the,
games
and
in
I,
one
at
season?
Towards the end, I was the only one who was playing him.
But I thought you played him, viable. Literally every game, right?
Yeah, I played him every game.
Yeah.
But I was the only one who was playing him.
Yeah, true. Isaac, I know you had a good question about just the general meta.
Yeah, so this is a question I actually got from Twitter, and let me find the name of this guy so I can shout him out. It's from @WaskerBoy. He says, it seems like no one's ever happy with the current meta. He wants to hear your dream meta, right? So it's like, if every meta is shit, like what is the actual good one? What is the holy land? Is it where Lucian's in all five lanes every game? And you're just,
yeah,
double tapping each other back and forth, right?
That would be the best.
What is it, right? Because people do complain a lot. Oh, games are too slow. Games are too fast. Late game's too strong. Late game's too weak. Blah 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 blah. Where do you see the balance? Like, what would you wish it could be?
I just want the game to be fun to watch and play. And for me, my personal take on that is more champion viability bot lane where it's not just scaling ADs. Mm-hmm. And actually just honestly nerfing the difference between... there's a two-part problem. I think it's too easy to get to late game because people are right. Stopwatch does stifle a little bit early aggression. So it is a little easier to get to late game. Last hitting is way too easy right now. So denying people CS, they gave everyone a Doran's Blade passive. And it's just so easy to last it. You see CS numbers at crazy amounts, partly because you get 4 CS for a jungle camp, but also partly because you can't miss CS unless you have no brain. So
or no mouse.
Yeah, or no mouse. And it's so there's so many reasons why late game is the most viable strategy. You end up with these 50, 60 minute games, sometimes 90 minutes. And it's well, that was unheard of before. And it's because the discrepancy between a Gathering Storm hard scaler versus
Lucian
or Kalista is so high, and they just play for as late as possible. And so I just, what I wish is they would lower the discrepancy between like a Tristana and a Kalista late game. So maybe she only does like 40% more damage instead of like twice or three times as much. And that they make it harder to get to late game and give people like more agency to make plays, which means more champion viability, like more skillful stuff, not just like Kog'Maw sitting in the back. Like, I want Jhin, I want Lucian, I want like Ezreal and Kalista still, but also maybe like, you know, bring in some random stuff like Twitch or whatever, like make everything viable.
So, follow up question to that. They're talking about the like scaling versus early game and these sorts of things. Well, this is something that I've been kind of thinking about recently, and you know, where would you rather see it? Like, would you rather the champions, like their power curve, be more homogenized, where it's like everyone's like around the same at all times, or would you rather see it be more risk versus reward? So I pick Kog'Maw and I'm absolutely dirt at the start, but if you're playing Lucian and I get past 20 minutes, now you're dirt and I'm really strong. You know what I mean? Like, would you rather see it be more extreme like that, where the great Lucian player, you know, who can really dominate and get super far ahead in the early game, but then if you don't do it, your late game is crap, right? Like, would you even play that in pro play if that was a thing, or do you think people would be too passive?
I think they should never bring back the difference between Janna and Thresh or Alistar ever again. Like, the Ardent was probably the biggest difference you'd ever see in, like, how hard someone can scale. Literally, like, Worlds games are decided by how late the Janna team can scale, outscale the Lulu. And Lulu doesn't even scale bad. It was just, like, that's how insanely OP Janna was. Like, the discrepancy was so high. And I just never want to see that again, I guess. Like, I think it's boring to watch, and it's kind of just, like, frustrating to play because you feel like you're on a timer. And
would it be more okay if the Janna was really weak early, though, right? Like, if it's, like, the idea
you actually hit her twice and
exactly.
Dies.
Like, the idea being, is there a world in which it's okay for Janna to be that OP if she's super trash in lane, right? You know what I mean? Like, this sort of thing. And that's more what I'm kind of talking about is instead of it just being, like this, right? You have every champion's just like this. One champion's actually like this, and the other champion is actually like this.
For those listening on podcast, he's moving his hand up and down in graphs. Hyperscaler versus
the Lucian starts at a 10 out of 10 power. The Kog'Maw starts at a 1 out of 10. But by the end of the game, Lucian's a 1 and the Kog'Maw's a 10.
That's really interesting. I don't know. Like, I'm not a game designer, obviously, and I can just point out the problem. I don't have the solution.
Yeah, right.
But it really frustrates me sometimes when I look at the win rates and it's like, why is Janna and Lulu always at the top? Like, why can they please just like bring back Thresh? Like, bring back, I don't know. Melee supports are in right now, but
yeah.
I just never want it to be that again.
Do you watch any LPL? I know you're like super busy because this is a really curious thing I have about LPL. So like NALCS average game time is 40 minutes. LCK is 41 minutes. EU is 40 minutes. LPL is like 33. And they play like triple the games of NA now because they have 14 teams and they play best of threes, double round robin. How much of it then is the meta is slowing the game down versus the teams are slowing the game down? Because when you have regions that have 6 minute difference in their average game time, like, is there any sense of that is just the style that has taken shape in the region? Because I like, based on someone who watched an NA, I agree the game is too slow right now. Stopwatch delays things. Everyone's taking Gathering Storm on two or three people, and then they're scaling until 40 minutes in team fighting. But then I go and watch the LPL, and they're using their stopwatches to dive turrets, all their flashes to flash forward, and the games are ending in 30 minutes.
I think that just comes down to, like, what are the teams practicing in LPL? And I think they're all practicing the same way because it's kind of easier to build off, like, what other people are doing than to make your own. Like, you be the unique team that stalls for late. Mm-hmm. But it is way too easy to stall for late. And the reward for stalling for late is way too high. And that's why I hate Gathering Storm. I hate is a strong word, but I really don't like the design of Gathering Storm because it exponentially punishes you, basically, for stalling, or it rewards you for stalling the game out so long, and I just never liked those snooze fests. The funnest games are always the ones where like Peanut gets 12 kills on Lee Sin in 15 minutes, or like just there's just always
doubles popping off on Lucian.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I love it. I love those games, and they're fun to play, and I think they're way more fun to watch. And to encourage that in a pro play means that the easiest thing to do, the most effective thing to do, isn't to stall for. I think stopwatch.
Yeah,
I defended it, but I also realized, like, yeah, it is better for defending yourself than to dive.
I also think pro players themselves kind of inherently want to reduce risk a lot. So that's why sometimes, even if there are a lot of champions that could be pushed in fringe cases, like specific counter picks or, you know, Riven or something like that is one that showed up super recently. People, not only do you not want to, as a pro player, spend a lot of time on something that is only going to be useful in maybe a couple of scenarios in games or whatever, picks bans that, you know, it specifically would be very good in. Mm-hmm. But if the champion balance team does get, you know, multiple champions to be like this viable state that you're talking about, it still feels like it takes pro players an extra nudge to be like, okay, that one's cleared for, you know, a stage games or whatever. I'm not going to get flamed for, you know, getting mm-hmm. playing Moon played Shaco one time or whatever. Mm-hmm. When the win rate was actually number one for junglers or whatever. And he got blasted the first game. So like, we're never playing that again. It's garbage. And, you know, there are other things that contribute to that, but that's just like an example.
Yeah, it always sucks when you... Like, I really wanted to play Vayne early in the split before she got nerfed.
I think Vayne was really good.
And she was good, but it was like, I was the only one playing her, so when we lost, it felt like, oh, maybe we're wasting our time, fellas. So, you know, I felt guilty whenever that happened, and yeah,
like
it's true.
Like a level of groupthink and practice.
Yeah, you kind of get peer pressured by everyone when you're the only one doing something and it goes wrong.
What about Twitch, then? Because Twitch is actually, you know, talking about win rate, Twitch is the highest win rate AD carry right now. You know, why is Twitch just not in pro play or hardly at all, right? Arrow played at one game. I think it actually looked really
good
for them that game. But, you know, why do you think it's not being seen, right? Like, if win rates matter to you, if that sort of stuff matters to you, like, do you actually, like, look at these
in context,
much? Yeah.
In context, I think Twitch is really strong in solo queue because people don't respect the stealth. Mm-hmm. And in pro play, you typically see a lot more pink wards. Mm-hmm. You see a lot more vision in general. So when you see Twitch, like, roaming up, that person will respect it. And wave clear is probably one of the most like key things in pro play because moving like 1 or 2 seconds can make the difference between a winning and losing fight. And so Twitch has all these weaknesses that get countered by good players. Mm-hmm. And also like he doesn't really have a consistent strength, which is push and move first.
Yeah, I do want to just double back really quickly because I thought it was a super interesting topic of when we're talking about like it's too easy to stall for late game. I think back to like 2013 when Dragon gave gold. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that was good.
It's like you get first blood, you buy oracles, you clear all the wards, you get control of dragon, you're up 5,000 gold, and you like win the game. And it felt like most games were decided by like the 10-minute mark. Like, to get back to the original question of like, what is the perfect meta? When would you want the game to be decided, so to speak? Like, in the first 10 minutes? In 10 to 20? In 30 to 40? 40 to 50? Right? Because feels like everything is about efficiency and it's like, oh, whatever we think the most optimal strategy is. And assuming you can't actually find a perfect balance where like the 10-minute strategy is just as effective as a 50-minute strategy if played optimally, like what would be the most fun for you?
If I had to choose a time, probably between like 15 and 25. I remember last split is a great example of like, I thought that was a perfect 20-minute meta because it was Cho'Gath and Kalista was like at the forefront of the meta. Cassio was at the forefront of the meta. And it was like, every single game you'd see these champions, when Baron spawned, the team that was ahead was going to win, like for sure. And that's how we played in playoffs too. Like we really heavily prioritized this like 20-minute spike where when Baron spawned, any sort of advantage you had is just like you funnel all the resources to Baron. Mm-hmm. That felt a little bit boring, like, but I'm not sure how that was as a spectator because I was a player. But I like shorter games. I think they're more exciting. And, like, when you do finally get that late-game gem of, a 50-minute, like, crazy back-and-forth, I think that should be unique and exciting and, like, really cool to see.
Yeah. Would you rather see Baron gets buffed again then? You know, it's like, you know, as soon as you said 15 to 25 minutes, I immediately thought, okay, Baron, right? So it's like, do you want the game to literally be, okay, they got Baron, they win, right? Like, is that going to feel, you know, like super compelling, you think, as a player, if it's all decided on that first Baron? Because you obviously there's a world in which you can make it the Baron just insanely powerful, right? Like it triples your AP, it triples your AD, you double your range, and then the game just ends 100%, right? Like, and that's hyperbolic, but the point is just like, should it be that powerful that it's actually just okay, TSM got the Baron, they deserve to win the game?
I mean, there's so many ways you can balance that. You can make it last shorter if you want to buff the buff. You can make it harder to start Baron because right now, like, you see first item junglers just going Warmogs and abusing. This is like goes back to like, what's the easiest way to win? Get Warmogs. If you start Baron and they come, just back off and 5 seconds later you're full HP again. Like, there's so many things that pro players do that kind of just abuse the system, I guess. But we're just trying to win. Mm-hmm. And like, how do you balance that? I think like just make it more risky to start Baron, Maybe you can also balance that with a bigger award or a bigger award and a shorter timing. 3.5 minutes seems like it's enough to always get an inhib. Mm-hmm. So like, I think there's ways you can balance it for sure. I'm not a game designer, so I don't know, but Baron's seems pretty strong.
All right. You guys have anything else for 8.3? Do you want to move on to NALCS this weekend?
Yes, let's get to the meat.
All right. Moving into week 5 of NALCS, Double Lift. We're about to finish the first round robin. C9, Echo Fox, they're tied in first place at 7-1. You played both of those teams last week and had a chance to also be a 7-1 team. Anyway, what do you feel about just like the NALCS? Actually, first question is you play COG this weekend. Yeah. You had the Big Players Tribune article about having this rivalry with TSM, and do you still feel that rivalry with COG, or is it kind of like long
not at
past?
All? Yeah, literally not at all. After they beat us in the finals, like when I first joined TSM, I was like, man, I really hate them. Then after that, it just kind of went away because COG was really like not really relevant ever since then. So
time heals all wounds.
Yeah, time heals all wounds. It's been a lot of years.
That's like
since
your ex girlfriend. You're like, yes.
Yeah. We're cool.
She was not that hot.
So it's like, just because they haven't been winning, you're like, I don't care about them anymore.
It's just never been like, oh, what a
which
hype
probably
matchup.
Just created a big one-sided
rivalry.
Yeah. Maybe they hate me. I don't know, but.
they don't. They probably will.
Yeah.
After they hear this. No, I'm just kidding.
No, after they hear this. That assumes they watch the dive.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, everyone watches the dive.
Yeah, but someone will
as
just
we learned
flip
today.
It, you know, that's true, the thing. True. You just have to read the headline. You don't actually have to watch it.
Don't quote me.
All right, so you are going to be playing against CLG this weekend, so you don't really feel any rivalry. But like, what about you know playing against former teammates, right? You're going to be playing against Biofrost. Like, you know, you guys obviously talked on the lounge and everything, but are you more excited to actually prove yourself against former teammates when you're playing against them to like kind of show that oh you are the better AD carry or like oh you know that kind of thing?
Yeah, it feels better when you win, and a little worse when you lose. I think it's like, if anything, I have a rivalry with just Biofrost. Rivalry is a really strong word, but I have, like, a vested interest in winning against him.
It's fun to beat your friends.
Yeah, it's fun to beat your friends. And Vincent is, the thing is, though, that he's such a little sweetheart, you know? He won't ever shit-talk me if he wins. And if I win, I'm like, oh, you know, I'm sorry.
What about the tweet that Hanser posted, some picture of him messaging Biofrost or whatever, and he cropped it? You didn't see that?
I didn't see it. What is it?
He dropped an F-bomb on him in reply to Hanser saying,
oh my God. You
know, I wish you good luck, buddy, or something like that.
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah, Vincent, he's just playing hard to get.
Okay. Did CLG make him toxic?
They did.
Yeah. They improved his communication, dude. That's what he got blamed for and kicked off TSM for.
Oh, okay.
All right. We asked you before the show if you would be comfortable giving us an AD carry ranking since you've played against all of the AD carries except for one in the NALCS.
Mm.
Oh.
Do you want to give us, Kobe?
I also want to, I wanted to first start this with, can I get an update on, since you are the one who started the sneaky in lane meme, and you just played against them. Can we get an update on your opinions of Sneaky just in lane as a, you know, 2v2? And then you can go into your full rankings.
All right, all right. Sneaky's way better. That was a while ago, and he was really bad. But
so you stand by the original assessment.
I stand by, yeah, in context, yeah. It was great. And actually, he came up to me at LCS the next week and was like, man, I'm so glad. He didn't say I'm so glad, but he's like, oh, it's kind of good that you said that because I really was so bad in lane. And then I realized I was bad because you said it and, like, I worked on it. So I was like, oh, that's cool. You know, like, you didn't, like, take it, like, hard. Like I was,
your
like,
trash talk actually improved your opposition.
So yeah.
C9 fans can thank Doublelift.
I should stop doing that. And speaking of Sneaky, like, he's playing really well. He's, like, playing out of his mind, actually. So, I mean, props to him. I think he is the best performing AD right now.
So Sneaky's number one?
Yeah. If we're excluding me and I had to rank the other nine... there's like a lot of middling ones that I don't want to like.
I mean, care let's about. Just include you. Put yourself at the top, okay?
Okay, I'm at the top. Sneaky's number two.
What about Zven?
Do you want to see a list of AD carries? I don't know.
Yeah. Zven is definitely number three. I think like he's had a pretty rough start, but obviously his potential is so high. The P word. Then I'd probably do like Cody Sun.
Okay.
And Altec. I don't really know how to like rank which one is better because Cody looked amazing early when then his team started losing, and then Altec has been looking good the whole time, but I don't know when his team is going to start losing, if ever. Yeah, and then at the bottom, I mean, then there's like Deftly, Stixxay, Wild Turtle. Oh boy. Apollo. Oh man, there's so many bad ones.
We'll let you group the bottom ones. Yeah, yeah. Whatever you decide is the line into like trash can bottom tier or whatever if you want.
Like the
get as far down
four,
as you can.
The four worst is like Wild Turtle, Deftly. Oh man, I feel bad putting Stixxay in there, honestly. Yeah,
no feelings.
Stixxay, Apollo.
You do you, man.
This is those, cold hard analysis. Yeah, yeah.
They're at the bottom, and then Arrow is like in his own like limbo where he's stuck with Lemonation. So I don't know where to put him. He's either first or worst. And then then there's the top, and I think the top is always the most compelling because it's just like it's really interesting when we play against each other.
This is why I like having your honest opinion on.
And you got to keep in mind that you're now motivating all these players to improve.
Yeah, I know.
You're welcome. Helping them.
Well, you're welcome, Lemonation.
I didn't realize I was trash. Now I'm going to work on not being trash. Thank you.
Deathly's like, what? 1 in 7? Oh, boy. We need to step it up, guys.
Yeah.
All right, this is a question for the group as well. If we're talking about NALCS, we have the standings. C9, Echo Fox, 7-1, TL, like, 5-3, TSM, 4-4. Like, I don't know if it's too early to do this, but we had this question earlier. Like, you have to pick right now. Who is going to win at the end of the split, right? Because we have teams trending up, we have teams trending down. We're nearly done the first round robin after next week. My biggest overachiever is Echo Fox right now. Like if I think they're going to end the first half 8-1. I think they're going to beat 100 Thieves that they play, I believe, next week. I don't think they're going to finish the season 16-2. Like I think that's a huge improbability. And then I guess I would say the team that I expect to improve the most from the first half in the second half would be TSM. Do you guys have kind of like your biggest overachiever and biggest underachiever of the first 8 games? Hmm. Is it TL Doublelift or the biggest underachiever? 5-3?
Oh, man. Yeah, we suck. I don't know. Our trajectory is not looking good, fellas.
What is it about the good weeks and the bad weeks? Because I watched your first week, and then I watched your documentary, and you were, like, talking with your sports psychologist or something, and you said you didn't feel like you learned anything. And then, like, the next week, you were great again. I was like, great, this solved the problem. And then last week, you lost again. Like, is it a cycle of we're learning, we're not learning, we're learning, we're not learning, or is it something else?
Yeah, pretty much. The double-edged sword of losing is you feel really bad, and it can, like, break your mental, I guess. But at the same time, those are the ones that you learn, take the most from, and I wish it could just be a straight trajectory where whether you win or lose, you grade yourself honestly and objectively and like, and you just have the same motivation. But like, there's something about losing where you just get so pissed off that you like really, really, really focus for the next week. So I'm glad that it happened now. I'm not happy that we lost, but I'm glad that it was in week 4.
Mm-hmm. For me, like overachiever, underachiever, I don't know. I mean, I think if I have to say a team that was probably the biggest underachiever so far, probably you do have to look at TSM with expectations for like that team coming in.
Mm-hmm. But do you think they'll be better next half of the season?
Yeah, I do. I just think when I think about it, even if I don't have a ton of faith in Mike Young to be a dominant jungler, it almost just doesn't make sense to me that with Haunter, Bjergsen, Zven, and Mithy bot lane, that you aren't better than a 50-50 team, right? Like, that just doesn't seem to make sense to me based on their history. I don't know how you feel about that playing against them, but maybe you can answer that later. But and as far as like overachiever, I don't know. I mean, I maybe would have said 100 Thieves, but they're already kind of on a downward trajectory. Like, I was a little bit surprised by their really strong start. I thought some of their games looked kind of shaky, and now they have had a bit of a rough weekend. But I guess it'd be fair to say Echo Fox still, because I still think Echo Fox is going to be like a top 3 team, and I still think they're very good. But I definitely did not see them as a team that was just going to like run the table.
Yeah, I feel like Echo Fox is winning a lot because other teams aren't nearly as decisive as them. Like, they'll just do a 50-50 Baron, and it'll turn into, like, an 80-20 Baron because the other team is so surprised that they're willing to take this massive risk and just don't know how to react to it. And they've just caught some teams by surprise in close games and kind of blown it open. I don't think that works the second time around.
Well, it also seems like the personality conflicts that everyone thought was going to be with this team haven't shown through in the games, at least.
Yeah.
And they do seem like they do have these game plans where you're talking about making decisive decisions. You know, they're not getting bogged down in that communication issue that we talked about at the beginning of the episode with a lot of teams. So you also have to give them credit for that.
So what do you think about some of the teams that have specifically underperformed? I'm kind of more interested in that, like as far as, so a lot of people had very high expectations for TSM and CLG coming into the split, right? Like,
oh yeah, Jet, you didn't say CLG underperforming, most underperforming team?
No.
You
so
predicted them number one. First?
I was mainly saying who will be better by the end of the season. And at this point, I think it is a hard sell to say CLG. So
yeah, like, do you think that this is, do you think that CLG and TSM, are they underperforming or they're just not that good and people just overrated them?
No, TSM's really good, mm-hmm. and I think towards the end they will be better, and that's motivation for me, you know, to believe that and to want to outwork them and be better. I think Mike Young just chokes, and if anything is going to be the downfall of them in playoffs, it's probably just going to be the fact that their jungler seems to just, like, get really nervous on stage. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's something that you can out-practice, even if you're putting in, like, so many more hours or whatever. Like, that's just a him problem. And it sucks. Like, I don't know. It sucks for them. But the most, I'd say, like, the biggest overperformer, though, for me is, like, Clutch Gaming. I thought for sure they were going to be garbage.
Four?
Yes. I thought they were going to be a bottom team for sure. And they're taking games off TSM. They're just better than I thought.
No faith in Pebavin?
Well, that's the question. Are they better than you thought? Or do you think that they shouldn't be at 4-4 based on how they played? Like, that's kind of this question. They're 4-4 now. Next 8 games, are they 4-4 again? Are they an 8-8 team? Or do you think they're going to be like 5-10, 5-11?
That's a good question. Man, they're tied with TSM and 100 Thieves right now. I think they can maintain it. I think Lyra's good. Their ball lane's good. They have Solo. Man, that sucks.
You still think so? I think Lyra's been struggling.
Poorly.
Yeah, I thought he would suck too, but he's playing well. But maybe just my, like, solo queue predisposition. But Licorice and Solo are, like, the two rookies coming in now, and it's like,
Licorice has been popping off.
Licorice is popping off. There's a lot of good top laners right now in LCS. There's Huni, there's Impact, Someday, mm-hmm. Haunter. Like, I just don't see Solo in there at all. Mm-hmm. He's not getting some. And Darshan on the 7th place team is, like, owning his lane most of the time. So.
Yeah. I'd be curious to hear your opinion about FlyQuest. And, like, you know, they obviously, this last weekend, looked a lot better. You know, they got their mid laner now. Fly came over. You know, they looked to be pretty good. Like, do you see teams like them and CLG on the up and up? Or do you think that they're going to be ending near the bottom? Like who are the teams that are, you know, going to miss out playoffs, right? So it's like most people are saying, if we just say, you know, you, C9, Echo Fox, are all in there. The top three teams are in there. Then out of the next grouping of teams, right, there's TSM, Optic, Clutch, 100 Thieves, FlyQuest, CLG, Optic, right? There's all these teams that are within a couple games of each other, right? There's only three more spots. Who actually makes it? Who do you think is on the outside?
Man, my brain says Clutch, FlyQuest, Optic, and Golden Guardians. But the standings don't really reflect Clutch being at the bottom. I don't know. I guess I don't have that much faith in them in the second half, to be honest.
You can't shake
so,
it.
So, yeah, I can't shake my feeling. I think those four, I mean, 100 Thieves and CLG, they have a lot of veterans. A lot of those players have, like, consistently made the finals or mm-hmm. or just, like, been pretty deep in playoffs all the time. I think they'll pick it up, just like that experience is going to kick in.
I think it's so hard. I still like best of one from an entertainment standpoint, but I also feel like they make these standings
for now,
more
so
variant
hard.
Than best of three would have been.
Yeah.
Like, so many of those, like, the TSM series against Clutch, where they lost for, like, a couple of Baron steals. Yeah. I think they just win the next two games, so that's a best of three, and it's over. And I think that's actually, it's creating higher pressure games for a lot of these guys, and, like, that could be why some of them have, like, big nerves, because you miss one smite. It's like, well, I don't get to play again until next week. Game's over. Week's over.
Yeah.
There goes all of our practice.
Wait, do you guys like casting best of ones?
I like casting it way more, to be honest. I think it's really fun, because it's like, so if you're in a really boring series, right, and it's mm-hmm. a best of three, if the games are playing slow, if both teams are just playing super risk averse, if you know the games where it's like both teams are playing not to lose instead mm-hmm. of to win, right, and you have like a 50-minute first game, then it's, of course it's less fun to be looking going into the next ones. Whereas even if there's a slow game in this format, there's always the next series, and I also think that people are more willing to try different stuff because it's a one off. So. I think from perspective.
I personally like, as far as best of threes go, though, although I do like best of ones, I miss the kind of coming up with what I was going to think the losing team was going to come back with in game number two. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of series where I was super excited to go into like the next game of this to see the corrections and see the changes that they made and what are they going to be able to do on stage. But that being said, with the meta also being slow right now and the games being super long, if it's a series like you're talking about, like it's going to be a 60-minute game and then you're like, oh, I got maybe two more of these. if the opposite team wins, you know, at the second time, then that can be kind of rough. I think there's definitely positive and negatives for both sides. Yeah. It's not just kind of one-sided thing.
The best of threes are always going to be, I think, more exciting. Like if it's like the most possible hype and it's like three sick games, that's going to be more exciting. But I think on average, best of one is more exciting. The biggest downside to me is trying to understand how good teams actually are. It's so much harder.
And predicting best of one.
Yeah. Yeah, you've had some unlucky days.
I'm 25 and 15 on the year. I'm plus 10.
Yep, there you go. But it's hard.
Oh, you guys like actually count this for your egos?
No. The analyst desk is predicting every single game.
Uh-huh.
I'm 25 and 15, and last week was not good. Last week, I think I was 1-4 on the first day and 3-2 on the second. Like, that upset day destroyed me. And picking Team Liquid also destroyed me.
I'm sorry.
Him and Mark are doing the predictions every day, and then they're tracking like how they're doing. You know,
yeah. I'm currently beating Mark by one game, but he's been beating me a lot.
Him and Mark are the only ones predicting because they're.
We don't switch in the analyst desk anymore. Like he does.
Right.
I do the countdown.
So who's the best, Jack? Who's winning?
Who's the best
in the predictions?
Yeah.
Well, it depends. In the people that have picked all the games, I'm 25 and 15. If it's just the games that I have my dog pick on Instagram, my dog is the best.
There you go.
He is 5-3. He picks one game a day. In those games?
Yeah, in all the games.
24-16.
Oh, so you're one up.
There's literally only one game difference.
So Jack's
between
the best.
Us. Yeah.
There you go.
And then we get like random people on Reddit and Twitter being like, I have predicted 30 games. You guys suck. And I'm like, I hate you. Like, I don't care what your prediction rate is.
That's cold, man. You got to appreciate your fans, Jack.
Yeah. Hey, the person who's predicted 30 games, just send me your predictions and proof that you predicted properly. And I may just copy them for the effect online. Want to move on to Twitter questions?
Sounds good.
Sweet. Doublelift. This is for you, apparently, from Nick Applesaucy. If you had to let one of the dive members support you, who would it be?
What ranking are you guys
in lane? D1.
Yeah, he's definitely the highest ranked.
Yeah, yeah.
Azale hasn't played ranked this year.
All I've played is the flex Q play.
But he did win Riot Rumble a little while ago, which is like
I play Phil and Diamond.
Yeah. Wait, you won the Diamond Riot Rumble?
I won the Masters Riot Rumble.
They call it Masters.
It's the top X percent of players. It's based. It's
what's your main role?
It's the top 40 players.
I play Phil.
He plays.
Okay,
top.
I got his name for sure.
yeah, he's
Phil.
He's
Phil.
I'm sorry, Kobe.
There you go.
Phil mains can play support because they get it the most.
Because you get it a lot. Yeah. I can be your e-girl. I can play Janna. There you go.
I need an e-girl.
There you go.
No, I don't.
You didn't even ask if you wanted me to be your support man. I suck.
Jungler.
I suck.
You're a jungler.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
So I did get to Diamond 1. I've gone to Diamond 1 every year, or I've gotten to Masters. I've actually peaked in Masters every year, but I also feel my secondary, if I don't get jungle, is support. And Azale has not peaked above, what, Diamond 3?
I'm on Asian Bachelor right now, and
I've been challenger in
5v5.
I had wrist surgery in 2016.
And I got D2 in 60 games.
But I used to be.
I'm never going to talk to you again if you don't.
And where do you guys see yourselves in 5 years?
No.
I'm sticking with Azale. I'm sorry.
See, there you go.
I can't go back.
In 5 years, I see myself winning the world championship with Doublelift.
Oh, my.
There you go.
Can we do this?
I'll support that team.
Hold on. Kobe, we're never going to be able to do this, but in a world in which we could, I think it would be cool. Doublelift plays with Azale. You get to pick an AD carry to support, and you guys like two.
Oh, it'd be free.
To see who would win.
I'll be free.
We wouldn't have to try.
Oh, I'm going to grab Sneaky then.
Yeah.
In lane?
And you'd support Sneaky.
Yeah,
you just said he was really
good. I'm doomed.
Cool.
This would be free.
I really want to try that somehow. I don't know how we can set it up, but like.
Just a
I'm totally down.
First, you just have to 100 CS first tower or two kills.
I think Kobe and Sneaky would win that match.
Oh, we'll smash him. I've seen Kobe's off roll.
Okay. Yeah. I've seen Sneaky's main roll.
See, I love it. See? It's going to be free.
please, Sneaky, that would be super fun. Okay, next question.
Damn, I need to start playing some support.
Yeah. At David Paterly, this guy always sends us tweets, and it's Paterly or Paterly, we're not sure. The dive lol, is COD taking full advantage of the mandatory ASOL ban against them? How does it affect pick ban strategy when teams essentially have to have five bans against COG? Do you think COD feels compelled to pick Aurelion Sol when it's open? A la versus Clutch Gaming, because they picked it this week in second.
I don't
know
if I even really like agree that it is a must ban when they like.
Let me check.
I don't know that it has been banned every time. I believe
they lost.
Yeah, like when they played it, they lost, and I believe it's been left open a couple other times. It certainly has drawn some bans, but like I think it's one of those things personally where he has to smash a game with it before everyone starts banning again, and then you get an advantage. I think if you have your like weird champion, right, it's like, oh, okay, you bring out your Kennen AD, you go 20-0, then people are going to get to ban Kennen, and then you have an advantage from it.
So ASOL is the most banned champion against COG, okay, still tied with Kalista, 63% of the games. But yeah,
I think part of that is just that bans aren't really that important right now. It's just strange the way the meta is, but like you actually end up with a lot of free bans a lot of the time. And so then you just start doing target bans because why not?
Right, because there's so many shared champion pools and you're just like, yep, if we're exactly banning this, then we're banning ourselves.
Yep, that is exactly right.
Last question. Team Liquid LOL, I don't know why they didn't ask you directly, but what are you getting Ole for Valentine's Day?
Oh my God.
We're filming this on Monday. It releases on Valentine's Day.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So whatever you say, he will know if you've like,
is Valentine's Day, what day of the week is
it? It's on Wednesday, as far as I know.
Who?
I'm reminding you for reasons.
I guess he likes Soul Tofu, so I'll buy him Soul Tofu.
Have you been to Tofu yet?
No, I haven't.
I think it's better than Soul Tofu. It's
really?
On the same street. Yeah.
Okay, then I'll get him Tofu. Thanks for the recommendation.
There you go.
That's it.
Great. So romantic.
You're going to take him out to dinner on Valentine's Day?
No, I'm not even going to.
He's just going to leave the tofu on his desk.
I'm just going to order it for him.
Get him a gift card.
That's what he would like most. He doesn't like going out.
No. Okay. Have you guys taken the love languages test?
No.
You and
with
Ole?
The bot lane?
No, but I'm pretty sure we're polar opposite.
Okay.
Sounds like some high quality TL content. That
you
guys
because
are bumping out.
If his love language is not gifts, then I don't know if buying him the Soul Tofu will be any good. If it's quality time, then taking him out will be important.
Oh, that's true.
Or if it's words of affirmation, then you just need to tell him he's did good.
Yeah,
I was listening to the Alt-Stream. It sounds like words of affirmation is up there.
Yeah, words of affirmation is definitely up there. Maybe like it's an act of service for me to get that for him too.
Yeah. All right. Everyone should take that test. I think it's important.
There you go.
Jesus.
Good to know. And on that note, I think that's going to do it for this episode of The Dive. I want to say thank you so much, Doublelift, for coming in, for flaming lots of people and getting people to clickbait us with our good captions that we're going to be able to have.
Hell yeah. We'll be back next week filming in our usual Wednesday slot for The Dive. But until then, check us out this weekend. NALCS returns. COG takes on Team Liquid in the opening match of the week. That starts 2 p.m. Pacific time, and NALCS countdown starts 30 minutes before that. See you then.